Hey, it's Graham here from the Confident Man Project. And another project that I keep hearing about from all over the place is called the Mankind Project. And generally, when I start hearing the same message from a whole bunch of different people, I start paying attention. So I'm very happy today to have Boysen Hodgson from the Mankind Project USA. He's the Marketing Communications Director on the line, and I'm keen to hit him with some questions to find out a bit more about how guys can improve their confidence through what the Mankind Project offers. So, Boysen, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, Boysen, tell me, before we start talking about the Mankind Project itself, I'm really interested to hear how you came to be involved in men's work and Mankind Project and all this kind of stuff.
Sure. So I got involved with the Mankind Project in 2004. I did the primary training called the New Warrior Training Adventure in April of 2004. And for men involved in MKP, that kind of becomes a marker when we did our weekend, when we did the training. And I learned about it, found out about the Mankind Project from one of my brothers, my younger brother, who had done it years earlier. And I am one of seven boys. I have six brothers. And there's one brother who has not done the training now at this point. So all of my other brothers to that point had been going through the training. My dad did it. My stepdad did it. I have cousins who had done it. And I was the lone holdout of all of us who were connected closely at that time, saying, no, I don't need that. I've got my books. You know, I was an avid self-help reader. I was had a meditation practice off and on for a long time. And I was kind of the self-taught, spiritual, enlightened one in the family. So I kept refusing the call. To do the NWTA. And I think when I get honest about it, I was terrified of what might change in my life if I actually stepped across that threshold. I was also, aside from my brothers, I did not have deep friendships with men. I didn't have connections to men. I had superficial kind of buddy relationships with some guys, but I had never been in a space where I felt safe to actually talk to other men in a way that wasn't based in some kind of competition or one-upmanship. And I was terrified of that. I was terrified of actually confronting that.
So did you feel that there was something missing there in your life at the time, or did that bother you, not having those kind of relationships?
It did. When I finally said, yes, okay, I'll do it, I had ended a 7.5 year relationship with a woman that I had maintained a very tight kind of closed world in my bubble of relationship. And I ended that relationship, and on the other side of that, it was kind of like, whoa, now what? I have very few close friends. I have all this energy now, like, okay, what am I going to do with my life now? And one of the first things that kind of popped up was, I don't live super close to my family. I love my family. I still communicate with my brothers a lot, but I wanted to have people that I could be connected to, men that I could be connected to in a non-superficial way, in a way that kind of honored the self-help and personal growth and seeking that I had been doing in my life. And that was a missing piece for sure.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned that a relationship with a woman ending was a bit of a trigger for you in this, if it sounds like what I'm hearing, because our relationships with women often bring up this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I am one of those guys, and I share this with a lot of other guys, who I tended to invest my relationships with women with all of my emotional stuff. So I expected that I would get all of my emotional support and those kinds of that kind of intimacy and close connection through relationships with women, to the exclusive of everything else, you know, to the detriment of everything else often.
Ah.
So that was a big transit. Yeah, I was in a transition time for sure.
Yeah. So when you say to the detriment of other things, what can you give me examples of some things that were suffering in your life?
Friendships. I'm just having friendships, and I am by nature somewhat competitive. I enjoy competition, but I don't like mindless competition. And I think that that's something that I really enjoyed getting back into when I had relationships where I was, you know, really connected with men. Then it was like, all right, let's play, you know, let's get into it. And then also having a place where I could get real honest about myself and get real honest feedback from other men about how I show up in the world. It's very different to, it was very different for me to be in a group of men where I was connected and close enough to these men and trusted them enough that I could have a guy get in my face and say, that's bullshit. You know, what's the truth here about what you're experiencing? I'm, you know, don't fucking play games with me anymore. I know you better than this. What's going on? And that's wholly different for me in a relationship with a guy to be called out and have my feet held to the fire than it was to be in a relationship with a woman. I'm now married. I've been married 6.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
My wife calls me out on stuff, and that's awesome. And it's different than it is in my group of men.
Uh-huh, right. So I want to explore that a bit more, but first, so how did it feel to be like the one holdout guy in your family? Because it sounds like everyone around you had done this specific training, and yet you were still terrified and saying, no, I'm happy with my books.
Yeah. Looking back on it now, and I disconnected myself from my family a lot during that period of time, just the way my life was. I had a very small life. Looking back on it now, I can see in my mind's eye my brothers kind of just shaking their heads and saying, dude, you know, come on, it's time. It's time to crack open. You know, it's time to face this. It's time to you know, challenge yourself in this way. And they didn't, you know, they didn't push. They just kept inviting. My brother Jay just kept inviting. He just kept saying, hey, you know, this opportunity is here for you. Whenever you hear it, whenever you feel it, this opportunity is here for you. But I'm sure it must have been frustrating as hell because they knew I was suffering. They knew. They were watching me, you know, squirrel around in my own stew.
Mm. So what do you think it was that you were so terrified of?
My shame.
Uh-huh.
I was terrified of my shame. I was terrified of being seen, being honestly seen by other men. I had been carrying around a belief that, you know, underneath all the books that I read and my intelligence and articulateness and all of those things, that I was a phony, that I was just a fraud, that I wasn't good enough, that I wouldn't be accepted just for who I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd always gotten that affirmation from women and never from peers, never from like having connected relationships with men. So I was under this delusion that I was somehow alone in these self-judgments and emotions that I had been sitting with for, you know, my entire young adult life. And I was terrified of being seen in that.
Got it. So I think this is a really common experience between a lot of people. Ironically, we sit in isolation feeling that we're not good enough, and shame is really the thing that's underlying a lot of that stuff. And yet we don't ever connect with other guys to learn that a lot of other people are going through exactly the same thing.
100%. And, you know, that connects to me with exactly, you know, the Confident Man Project. So once I learned that, once I saw that and got that lesson, through, you know, doing the New Warrior training and then subsequently joining being a part of men's groups, my confidence and my willingness to take risks, in being seen totally transformed. Like it made an incredible difference to know, holy shit, like this guy who I thought had it all together has experienced the same kind of self-doubt, the same kind of, you know, being scared of being found out as a phony. Like so many men I know carry that around. Like, I'm a fraud. I'm a fraud. If you really knew me, you would know, you would see all the bad things about me. And so many of us, I think, walk around with that demon perched on our shoulders. And once having that exposed, it was like, well, shit, I'm going to take some risks. All right. I'm going to put myself out there because I don't have as much to be afraid of now that I know I can do that.
Right. Because it's like we're walking around a lot of the time trying to keep this facade we're projecting to the world together. So we can't really afford to take big risks because there's a risk that it might all come crashing down and people will see that we're a fraud and that we're not really what we you know, want to be or what we pretend to be.
Yes, well said.
So was there anything particular in your past that you could pinpoint that kind of underlay this feeling of not being good enough and, you know, needing to keep isolated and not, you know, just feeling like a fraud? Like, was there something that you could see that had caused that, or?
Well, I could tell you a story about my childhood my childhood included lots of really fun adventures in divorce land. My folks got divorced when I was 10 and both remarried and, both re-divorced and both remarried again. And, you know, so there was a lot of up in the airness about my childhood. And I judge that that's true for, you know, my brothers as well. There was a lot that was just unstable. Mm. And I was loved. I was loved as a child. And I think all my, you know, brothers would agree with that our mom and dad, loved us, and there wasn't a huge amount of, you know, overt abuse in my upbringing. But I think that there was just this sense of I'm not in control of what's happening to me. Mm-hmm. So I learned to play a game. I learned to play yes man very early, to please people around me, to give people what I thought they wanted. To, you know, show up in ways that would get me superficially praised and not take a lot of risks to actually show up, you know, messing up or being confused, you know. So I got it together that this was the way I needed to be, and this is the performance. This was my performance of persona that I needed to maintain in order to be accepted. And that just, I ingrained that in myself over the years.
Uh-huh. And so what I'm hearing is some of the symptoms of what's been described as nice guy syndrome, right? You wanting to please people.
Oh, yeah.
And got to stay in control all the time, can't take risks.
For sure. Great book also.
Right. The Robert Glover one.
Is that the one? Yeah, No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I mean, what was your experience when you read that book?
I listened to that book. This is well after I was involved in MKP work. I was driving to Maine. I listened to that book driving to Maine, and it resonated. It was great. It was just like, oh, yeah, all right, right on, dude. And And at, by that point, I was looking at it from the other side on some set in some way. Like, I had gotten to the point where I was willing to risk. I'd gotten to the point where I was willing to be vulnerable with men. I'd gotten to the point where I was willing to, you know, have the men in my life be a lot, be more of that emotional support so that I could show up authentically and with some integrity and some balls in my relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it. So I read it at a slightly different point, a little earlier in my journey, if you like, where I just found it so, it was confronting and a big eye-opener because it was like, oh, hang on, I'm not this nice guy I pretend to be at all. In fact, nice guys are not that nice. They're manipulative and underhanded and, like, pretending a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah. And that was me all over. I am a... Oh, man. And I had, you know, I had people... It's not like the road signs weren't there. You know, I had people telling me that I was manipulative when I was in my teens. You know, I had... And then, you know, later, the term passive aggressive, you know, like poison, you know, this passive aggressive bullshit. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm a nice guy. What are you talking about? Aren't I making you happy?
Yeah. I'm trying so hard to make you happy. You know, how can you say I'm passive aggressive?
Exactly. Yeah. So that was definitely me.
Yeah. It's almost comical. I find myself laughing once you really get that. But geez, it was confronting when I first read about it. I was like, no, this is bullshit.
For sure.
But the funny thing was I could see it. Once I knew what to look for, I could see this in a lot of men around me. And I got to realize that this stuff that we're trying to hide from the world can see straight through that facade. It's like we're the only one that thinks that, you know, other people can't see that this stuff is going on for us.
Yes and no. I mean, yes and no, because I think that there's a sense that once you've been awoken out of the matrix, mm-hmm. you see it and it's clear. And when I was in the matrix still, you know, and that's a great analogy. I love the movies, love the analogy.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. That was the water that I swam in. So I really was incapable of getting outside of it. But now, yeah, for sure. I mean, a trip to the grocery store is an experiment in human psychology. You know, it's like just watching people and watching the interactions between people. It's amazing.
Uh-huh.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that women have a really good radar for this kind of stuff. Even if they don't really know what's going on for a guy, they can just see when he's not really there.
Yes.
So, which has been a huge motivator for me. Like, initially I got into this whole confidence thing simply because my relationships with women weren't what I wanted. And people kept saying that they wanted confidence. And I'm like, well, how do I get that, you know? So better go solve that. And then I discovered that it wasn't just about women. It was about my whole life.
Yeah.
And how I was showing up in the world. And which leads me to, so if guys have come from a similar kind of place to what you describe, like, then, you know, what do they do? And it sounds like one big groundbreaking step for you was to actually go and do this thing you were terrified of and hit the New Warrior Training, I think it's called.
Yeah, the New Warrior Training Adventure. Yep.
So tell me a bit about how that went for you.
So the NWTA, the New Warrior Training Adventure, back in those days was much more mysterious than it is today. And it's still a fairly mysterious thing. We bill it as, we talk about it as a modern initiation experience for men. And an initiation kind of has some markers that are associated with it. So what's created with the NWTA is a fairly ritualized, fairly dramatic, tightly packed 48 hours of experience.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is incredibly planned, incredibly orchestrated. You know, one of the cool things is it would be exactly the same in Australia with some cultural differences as it would be as it is in the United States. The protocols are the same so that no matter where you go, it's basically the same experience. And it is it's kind of a shock to the system. It is a wake-up call to men like myself who were kind of sleepwalking in some way through my life, and through the process of 48 hours of kind of being really shockingly taken out of what I was used to in the world and invited to go through this experience and invited to engage fully in, you know, face-to-face experience with men, group dynamics, personal growth process work, you know, personal exploratory work, some adventure stuff, some kind of spiritual stuff, connecting, you know, getting my feet planted in the earth through this whole process. By, you know, Friday night, I walked in there afraid of what was going to happen to me, and willing, also willing to just say, okay, I'm going to go with this. I'm going to dive in. I'm just going to go with the process. To say, feeling, I walked in there with 20 something other guys as participants, as strangers. I didn't know a single other man who I was going through this thing with or who was staffing any of it. Didn't know any of these guys. By the end of that weekend, these guys were like brothers to me. Like, I knew more about these guys and they knew more about me at a fundamental level than probably anybody but two of my brothers, you know, my actual blood relatives. Mm-hmm. And that was profound. That, you know, it was a profound experience.
The full interview is available as part of the Confident Man program at confidentman.net/program.